Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual, although the two major underlying stories related to all three martinis today, definitely not overall on the good side. In fact, Jim, you could possibly characterize Wednesday as Commies 2, USA 0. So we'll start with the first iteration of that, and that was what we thought was great news, and that part of it was great news yesterday, when American Alan Gross, a USAID worker who had been ridiculously imprisoned by the Cubans for 5 years, actually sentenced to 15, was released along with an American intelligence operative that is still unnamed, who had been there for, I think, 20 years. In exchange, though, we give up three jailed and convicted Cuban spies. But that was just the dress rehearsal for the president coming on around noon Eastern time yesterday and essentially saying, we are scrapping our existing 50-plus-year policy against the Cubans. I want to lift the sanctions. I want to lift the embargo. He's asking Congress to do some of that. But here's the president's rationale for trying to normalize diplomatic relations with Cuba.
Neither the American nor Cuban people are well served by a rigid policy that's rooted in events that took place before most of us were born. I believe that we can do more to support the Cuban people and promote our values through engagement. After all, these 50 years have shown that isolation has not worked. It's time for a new approach.
Clearly, that's not the good martini. The good martini is what followed a short time later when Marco Rubio, the son of Cuban immigrants, took to the podium and explained why this is a terrible, terrible idea. He later reiterated those very deep concerns in an interview with Brett Baer on the Fox News special report.
It is the most historic thing that's happened in the relationship with Cuba since 1961. But in my mind, it sets back democratic progress. Put for yourself for a moment in the place of an activist, a dissident on the island of Cuba who has made it their life's purpose to condemn what the Castro regime is doing. And now here comes the U.S. under Barack Obama and basically embraces that government and has said, and in return for this embrace, we're not asking them to treat you any better. It's a terrible day for democracy. It's a sad day for those that want freedom and liberty for the Cuban people. Today is a dramatic step in the direction of the Cuban regime becoming a permanent fixture that we'll be asked to accept forever. It's a terrible day for freedom.
We'll get to why the policy is the bad martini in a moment, Jim, but this is an issue that's obviously been under the radar given everything else that's been happening recently and even in recent years. And to have someone as articulate and knowledgeable as Marco Rubio once again reminds us why he's such a star and a critical player in the U.S. and potentially in the presidential campaign next year. But his ability to encapsulate the issue and explain the real dangers involved with changing this policy in such a dramatic way is a good thing because, as you pointed out a number of times, a lot of times we don't win the explanation war. And on this issue, Rubio's definitely got the upper hand.
It's been so long since we've heard a politician come out and say what we're thinking. It feels really good. This is a really bad move. I guess we're kind of merging our bad and good martini here together. I'll try to focus on Rubio here for a second. But this is giving away the store for no major concessions other than the release of one prisoner. This is a faraway issue to a lot of Americans. To Cuban Americans, it's less of a faraway issue. It shouldn't be such a faraway issue. And not just because Cuba is just 90 miles from the United States. It is because the tyrannical nature of the Cuban regime and their ruthlessness and their willingness to throw people into prison for having the audacity to speak against the regime, their antagonism to us, Rubio has pointed out that Cuba has, I believe, the third largest intelligence agency in the world targeting Americans after Russia and China. They have very big operations targeting the U.S. in terms of trying to steal our secrets and stuff like that. They are a state sponsor of terrorism, and we're going to take them off the list because we want to. I don't quite we gave them everything they wanted, and this is going to be such a benefit to the Castro regime. And almost none of this benefit, at least in the short term, probably the medium term, is going to go to the Cuban people who we want to help the most. I just don't understand what we get out of this. It doesn't do anything for the U.S. national interest. It's a great political win for Obama he gets another, you know, page in his legacy book and stuff like that. He gets something that, you know, the left has wanted for a really long time, and maybe he gets, but, you know, he thinks he's opening up an embassy in Havana soon. Now, the, you know, full diplomatic relations and all that stuff. Rubio said, oh, yeah, and where are you going to get the funding for that? So it's going to be an interesting fight to see on that front. But it's a really unnerving turn of events, and kind of, you know, adding to our other martinis of the day. We have a really unchained president who knows he's no longer accountable to the people, and so he's just going to pursue his prerogatives and not care what Congress thinks, not care what the American public thinks. And it's going to be unnerving for the next 2 years to see what happens when a president just tunes out what everybody else is saying on these sorts of things.
A couple of follow-up points here. First of all, a lot of folks are pointing to the fact that this could actually be Obama basically saving this regime, because after the Soviet Union collapsed, they were looking for a benefactor. And finally, they found one in Hugo Chavez, who obviously is dead now. And that regime in Venezuela is in big trouble, both in terms of interpolitical turmoil and the fact that their major cog in their economic machine is oil, and the price of oil is plummeting. So there's not as much financial aid coming from the Venezuelans to the Cubans as before. So they might be on the brink of some very, very dire economic situations, which would be, yes, bad for the Cuban people, but it might be the only way to actually get the fundamental change that you need there. The argument on the flip side is, well, engagement really worked with China. and if you think that the Chinese people have the freedom that we all wish they had as a result of a robust trade, I'm not sure the Cuban people should be real optimistic about that.
Again, it's very hard to see what good comes out of this.
The other thing that was interesting before we get on to the crazy martini, Jim, is how many times the president referred to the fact that the policy was put in place before he was born, as if somehow the fact that it's older than him makes it less valid. It almost makes some people wonder if that's why he is so free, say, with some constitutional provisions, because that was passed before he was born, too.
Ah, you beat me to the joke, Greg. but yeah, again, like, I get the argument. The most common argument you see on the embargo is, well, you know, it's been in place for decades and it hasn't toppled the Castro regime. Okay, how's engagement with China working? How's our reaching out and our talks with Iran going? How's the isolation of North Korea going? You know, the idea that, well, Cuba teaches us that embargoes don't work. Why are we putting new sanctions on Russia then? The answer is, it is not an easy thing to influence the actions of hostile regimes that don't give a damn about what their policies do to their people. That is a tough thing to do. The idea that one size fits all. Look, you know, South Africa ended up being very vulnerable to sanctions because they cared about how the international system of sanctions was going to hurt them. And it can work in certain circumstances. Other regimes like North Korea don't care about bad publicity. Or I guess you could say maybe they do care about bad publicity in the form of movies, huh, Greg?
Excellent transition. It was just yesterday in the Crazy Martini, we were talking about this whole hacking scenario with a group, oddly enough, with the initials GOP, but I'm pretty sure it's not the Republican Party. But then it got a lot more serious by them saying, well, if Sony still plans to release this film on Christmas Day, there's going to be 9/11 style terrorist attacks and no theater who shows this movie is going to be safe. In response to that, after we recorded yesterday, all the major theater chains, AMC, Regal, and the rest of them said, you know what, this just isn't worth it. This buddy film isn't worth all the hassle of this, so we're not going to show it, leaving Sony very little choice but to say, well, we're not going to release it now. And so essentially, whoever's behind this bullying effort, the United States government now is pretty sure it is the North Korean government. They've basically won here. Newt Gingrich saying, we've lost our first cyber war, and it's not a good precedent for anyone who threatens free speech in the future, even if it is a relatively stupid buddy movie. So, Jim, not good on a number of levels.
It was strong competition for the more disturbing news of the day yesterday, and I think this one is the bigger one. Newt Gingrich put it this, we've just lost the first major cyber war. Because it's not just that this, you know, that Sony is saying we're not releasing the interview. Another studio had a movie that was going to be a non-comedy about North Korea featuring Steve Carell. I know it sounds like a comedy, but it's actually going to be an action drama setting place, a paranoid thriller set in North Korea. And they canceled that one, too. I don't know if you could make Team America World Police today. Hollywood is now scared and terrified either of having more of their personal emails and stuff like that released to great embarrassment, potentially the threat of a 9/11 style attack on movie theaters might have been the what really terrified them. Or the third possibility is that they're actually terrified of the financial liability if something actually happens at one of those movie theaters. And everybody's kind of chuckling and saying, oh, you know, isn't this wacky? And, oh, North Korea doesn't have many, barely has an Atari computer. Ha, ha, ha. No, really, think about it. We are changing what movies we make in this country because of a dictator in another country. That didn't happen during the Cold War. All right. We are, you know, the lesson of the Muhammad cartoons has now permeated our culture to the point where Americans are afraid of offending other, you know, brutal dictators. You know, this is not the country we grew up in, Greg. I've never seen such a full-fledged cultural surrender. I'm glad to see, you know, folks from Seth Rogen to the other guys, to Rob Lowe, to even Michael Moore, kind of denouncing this and saying that this amounts to censorship, this amounts to surrender, this is Neville Chamberlain. But I don't know where we go from this, because I don't see enough people in Hollywood saying, to hell with you, you don't get a veto over this, we're not afraid of you, and we're going to show it because we don't let anybody boss us around and tell us what we can and can't say in this country. We're hearing the U.S. government, they're willing to kind of go on background and say, yes, it was North Koreans. They're not sure if they're going to make an official statement on this, Greg. We've been attacked by another country, and we're not willing to say it because we're afraid to be provocative. Well, then how the hell do you ever respond to it? And the answer is, we're not. And we are now in a new era in which we have to watch what we say and watch what we depict, because if, heaven forbid, we run afoul of the tempers of brutal dictators and their hacker allies.
Couldn't say it any better than that, so I won't even try. Jim, not a real fun day on the Three Martini Lunch, because real sobering news and real bad news on two major fronts. So we'll pick it up again tomorrow. Have a good day.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for listening today, and be sure to join us on Friday for the next Three Martini Lunch.